Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Oh, you just heard the ad there for Electric Picnic, Tom Dunn, the beautiful voice saying, thanks for making Electric Picnic 2024 such a success. And we are now selling tickets for 2025. Well, Oisín Nolan and a number of other people have contacted us in the last few minutes. Oisín, you're at Electric Picnic, but this morning hasn't been a success, has it?
Not at all, Joe. Not at all. We've been sitting here in the red car park in Electric Picnic since about 10:30. And we've gained about a total of 100 metres with thousands of cars trying to converge on a couple of different gaps in the ditches to try to get out onto the road.
But is it all being policed and stewarded? And
not in the slightest. That's kind of why I was calling in to see, was there anyone that could maybe answer for that? There's no guards, there's no stewards, there's no one even in a high-vis pretending to be a steward or anything. There's cars just bullying their way to the top, and yeah, it's kind of just every man for themselves at the moment.
And when you say the red car park, how big would that be? Or
I'd only be guessing now, but I think it is the bigger of the car park.
Well, insofar as you can stand out of your car and look around, how many people are stuck?
I would say at least 5,000-10,000.
What?
5,000-10,000 people, I'd say, at least. That'd only be a low-level guess. I'd say there's more.
But they're running ads. You heard the ad there a few minutes ago. Well, maybe you didn't. It's broken start. Thanks for making the Electric Picnic such a success.
Yeah, well, I'd question that now at the moment. There's just no direction here at all.
And what about food? Any entrepreneur selling food, water, chips, burgers, Heineken, not beer, we hope, in the car park.
Only for luck, I had a bit of water in the car with me and petrol in the car to keep me going, but my girlfriend has just had to go back to a couple of our friends' cars who had no water or any snacks in the car to keep them going for the last 3 hours. And it looks like we won't be out of here for at least another hour plus.
And was it not like that last year and the previous year? Now, I know there's 75,000 this year, and we've a load of calls about what Thursday night and Friday morning was like, but what's the point in doing them?
That's a different story.
But there are 75,000. Did you not think Oisín was going to, well, you're spending 300 quid, that you didn't foresee that it was going to be this chaotic trying to get out?
Well, I'm glad I'm not in the rush anywhere, Joe, to be honest. This place is not getting any freer looking at the moment.
Wow.
You would think with the organisation and the money that goes into it that they'd be able to put a couple of more holes into a few ditches around here just to
cars out of the field. Oisín, when you arrived on Thursday or Friday, who was policing your way? Who was directing you into the red car park?
To make an assumption here now, a lot of them, I think, were brought in from England. There were English stewards who didn't even know the direction of where Stradbally was in relation to the car park. So it was just people flagging people into the fields. And yeah, I don't know where they all are now. They're all gone home. I'd say their shift is done.
And you say you cannot see a single person in terms of directing or helping or marshalling traffic?
Not at all. We're coming up to a gap in the ditch here now that'll go out onto one of the minor roads, but that's all at a standstill. And at that point, I think we're about 6 or 7 cars across just trying to get down onto a single lane road, which, as I said, it's just everyone budging their way in with no order to it at all.
Well, I hope there's no fireworks or people getting annoyed, but it's a long way. You say you're there since 10:30. It's now 10 minutes to 2:00. Okay, Oisín, we'll check in with you in an hour, and we'll ring Mr. Ben. He was all over the media last week before the event, and then when we asked him to come on Thursday, when some people were raising a few issues about the monopoly and what was being sold.
But anyway,
maybe he'll come back on, or maybe he's listening and he'll do something about it. But anyway, go to Míle Maith go to Oisín, and don't panic. And But it is a long, long wait. But stay safe, and we'll keep in touch. Okay, Jim, you went safe yesterday in the centre of Dublin. It's Grand Canal Square. It's most people know it now because of the Borgosh Energy Theatre, that incredible venue. Jim, what happened?
How's it going, Joe? Good. Yeah, I've been doing salsa for the past few months. It's my new hobby. And there's a great community of us that meet up and dance every so often.
Okay.
And yesterday we went down and we decided to dance at the Grand Canal Dock. And sometimes we do that just outside, as you said, the Borgosh Energy Theatre. And we arrived there at 6:30. And this is a family event. There was toddlers, babies there, grandparents there. You know, you want to enjoy the sun, mm-hmm. the little sun that we get in this country. Anyway, around about 7 o'clock, there was lads on bikes circling us. And then they started letting off fireworks around about 10 metres away from us. And they started setting these off, these bangers, and they started getting closer to us. So then they started making us nervous, and we were concerned about the people at the dance, and we chased them away, and then they went away, and they started letting off the bangers on the road. And then I called the guards around about that time just to let them know what's happening. And then around 7:30, they came back, and they started aiming the fireworks at us. And one of the fireworks actually exploded in the group and nearly hit one of the kids. So then a few of the guys ran after them. One of the lads pushed one of the guys that was firing the fireworks at us off the bike. Mm-hmm. As a return, he got punched in the face. And then more of their friends came back and started throwing bikes at us and were threatening us. One of the lads looked like he had a steel bar and was saying, "I'm going to kill you, I'm going to kill you." And then basically the dance had to stop, and we waited outside of the Marker Hotel, and then the guards turned up an hour later.
But, like, when you say they have you any idea why they surround? Not that they need a reason, said you, but what were they saying when they were talking to you?
They weren't really. I mean, they started with the fireworks, and it just escalated from there.
Yeah.
I for the whole day I've been speechless and angry about it. I don't understand. We just want to dance, have a good time, and then, you know, one of the guys goes home with a black eye.
Okay, Emer is in Grand Canal Square in Dublin as well. Emer, you saw what's going on. What did you witness yesterday?
Okay, so I arrived. I was on a bicycle, a push bike. And I was just going down to do a kind of a recce because I have a chai bicycle cafe that I'm looking for a permit for that area.
Okay.
So I went down to do a recce in Grand Canal and I saw the salsa dancers and I thought, oh, this is beautiful. The sun was shining. It was gorgeous. And then I saw the gang. I heard the bang. It's not a banger. It was actually more serious than that. It was a firework. There was a small explosion on the ground on fire when they threw it and a huge smoke. Really, really dangerous. So
just to be clear, Emer, fireworks are illegal in Ireland. In the Republic.
Fireworks are illegal, so yes. It wasn't a simple banger. I've seen a banger where you throw a simple banger. This was a firework, a band, definitely firework. But they were they were prowling around the area on their electric bikes, in designer tracksuits, and electric bikes, so you couldn't catch them. But it was so menacing. They weren't saying anything. Mm-hmm. They were having conversations between themselves about what they were planning. And it was quite clear that they were acting, breaking the law. And so after they attacked the salsa dancers, they were getting closer. So they were throwing the firework around the Borgosh. And then I saw the firework and they threw it at the crowd of dancers. And I just felt so I was so scared because it was so dangerous and there was no security in the area. And I went over to the marker and she said she'd phoned the guards. I phoned the guards at 1928 and I spoke to the guards in Pierce Street. He said, "We've had a number of calls. We're on our way." I was walking back towards the bridge to go over towards Barrow Street.
Okay.
More of them were arriving and they started setting off, throwing the fireworks at each cafe on their way.
No way.
Like, so there's people down there trying to make a living, operating cafes and these feral, local people that local kids that quite clearly think they own the area and didn't want anybody else enjoying the space.
Okay, stay with us. I just say, Jim and Emer, stay there because I just want to go back to Electric Picnic, try and help people get out. It seems to be chaotic down there. Ellie O'Callaghan, Ellie, where are you?
Hi, Joe. I'm still in the red car park now for the last 4 hours in Strad Valley. I've been here since before 10 a.m. with having left the campsite pricing this morning, and I am still here with no sign of the exit.
And you say, did you pay for premium parking?
Well, it's when you pay for the early entry, you're supposed to get parking that's
when you pay extra to get it.
And it's supposed to be an advantage. That's why you pay the extra €40 for it. And we are now here since Thursday, and it's now 2 o'clock, and we have another 3-4 hours to travel home now.
And again, with Oisín a few minutes ago, is there any high-vis, anyone in authority, anyone marshalling the traffic or trying to help?
There is nobody in sight from what I see.
Wow.
Maybe down at the actual exit onto the road, but from what we've seen, it's just kind of standstill. And
what's the atmosphere like, Ellie?
It's not good at all now, to be honest. There's beeping horns here for the last number of hours. There's no bathrooms. We're stuck in the cars. Like, there's nowhere to go. Yeah, I mean, there's just, and you know, some people that I have a carload of four girls. There's girls working this evening in pubs down home, and they can't, like, we are trying to get home now, and we're here for 4 hours. It's just a joke at this point.
Yeah, and I see someone saying there was a Watford GAA match, loads of stewards and Gardaí at the start of the match, but no one afterwards. I presume they have to be paid if they're to be there afterwards. And what was it like when you were entering finally, Ellie, on Thursday or whatever? What was it like when you were arriving?
It was very well managed going in. You know, there was no problem. We got to the campsite nice and quickly. But, I mean, there's no shock here that there's 75,000 here this weekend. So I don't know why there's been such an issue with knowing that we need this manpower here.
Okay. Eddie, best of luck in trying to get out. We're trying to get on to Mervyn Benn, the organiser, to see what has happened, because people pay. 75,000 people paid £300 a year ago, and they'll pay whatever it is this week when the tickets are on sale for next year, this week after. What did our ad say? Thank you, Ellie. This is the ad that was on a few minutes ago on Liveline from Electric Picnic. Thank you for making the event such a success. Well, you'd be sitting on your laurels there for a while. Okay, let's go back to Grand Canal in Dublin. By the way, Ian, you mentioned you were thinking of opening a business down there. After what you saw yesterday, would you open a business down there?
No, I wouldn't. I did not feel safe. And if I could just say, that area is governed by other bodies, not just the guards.
Okay.
You have Waterways Ireland, you have Dublin Docklands, and you have Dublin City Council. And they all own a patch of that area. And I went down once just to do a photo pop-up. And within 5 minutes of me setting up my Chai Bicycle Cafe, a private security guard was over to move me on. And there was no sign of any private or public security yesterday.
Okay, let me bring Harry Crosby in. Harry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Why did you contact us? I know you live down there. I know you were the developer.
Well, I live beside it because I've all my life working on the docks, a long, long, long time, since I was a young fella, and all around the inner city. And when I have to ring up a radio and tell you that I was scared, then there is a serious problem. I was at home. It's just beside the place. I could hear the bangers. I went up because my missus runs the cafe on the corner there, and what I saw was shocking. Now, these young fellas have kicked the door of the cafe in a few times. They've had to send the people home. They've had to shut down. But the other night, having 20, 30, 40 young fellas in the black hoodies, in the black, in the dark, is very, very frightening. And the biggest problem of all is that the area is not properly lit. The big red poles that stand up are very pretty, but they don't work. And the biggest problem of all, there are two steel boxes in the middle of the square, which cover the stairs down to the car park, the emergency stairs. And they create black shadows in the middle. And in the winter, when you don't have anything as dramatic as the fireworks, you have gangs of young fellas in the hoodies up, and no person would cross, even I won't cross the square. And that's how bad it is. So
and
I took a leap.
Is it getting worse?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And the other strange thing, when I was up watching all this the other night, I went up because of the noise. And I the police don't have a key to the barrier to allow them to drive the squad car in. But one of the things I wanted to do to fix it was I took a lease on those two boxes and I got full planning permission to put in glass instead of the steel and to light them very brightly for inside and to light one of them as a little flower shop, which would be wonderful, and the other one as a coffee kiosk. And I have everything lined up. I have the money, I have the tenants, okay. I have everything. And a lot of the businesses, the people who now own the Borgaz Theatre and the Marco Hotel and several of the others, they put in a joint, a complaint to the Corpo. And it took us so long to get through the technical issues that we ran out of the 6 months we were given. But if they were to withdraw, I could glaze those boxes and solve 75% of the problem down there is those boxes. And the other thing that needs to be done urgently is that the businesses need to leave their lights on at night because the Bank of Ireland shuts down and it's a black box. The big iPod office beside Rita's Cafe shuts down. The theatre, when it's not open, shuts down and the place becomes a pitch black.
But how do you be told you can't leave lights on for environmental reasons apart from anything else? Who owns that space?
I think it's owned by Dublin Corporation.
Okay,
But you know what? It's potentially one of the most beautiful public areas in the city. The dancing that goes on is absolutely beautiful, and it broke my heart to see what happened the other night. And it is a shocking thing, and it could be fixed.
Okay, but you're saying it's an issue of lighting and the geography and the choreography of the place.
90% lighting, bright lights would solve the problem. And the minute the police arrive, this is not the first time this has happened. The minute the police arrive, they melt. They're gone. But when someone like me, when Harry Crosby tells you his whole life on the dock, if I'm intimidated, that's a problem.
Now, Harry, you also said that the Gardaí don't have a key to get through the barriers.
Well, there is a barrier that would allow them to drive in.
And what about, what about the fire service?
I don't know how it works, but the police cars will not pass the barrier. And if they drove in with the blue lights every couple of hours for the next few months until it's over, that would go a long way to solving the problem. But the big issue is it needs to be properly lit. Okay. Those steel boxes were designed by an American architect,
but
they were supposed to be lit from inside, okay. And it was never done. So they're black shadow boxes, and when the kids are around them in the black hoodies, it's really frightening and intimidating. And it needs to be addressed because it's one of the most beautiful parts of the city.
Yeah, but surely the children...
I have lived there...
Surely, Emer described him, and I'm quoting here, feral youth. Emer, what do you think of Harry's solution? That is, provide better lighting.
That's obviously one part of it. That was in broad daylight yesterday. That was early evening. The sun was still out. People were out. There were visitors there. It was so shameful. Visitors there, the Marco Hotel were trying to guide people as the best way to get around, but visitors, there were families sitting out, and they were determined to ruin everything. They were breaking the law, determined to hurt people by throwing those fireworks into a crowd of people. They didn't care.
Okay, and Jim, I want to go back to Jim for a sec. Jim, you mentioned, I'm just trying to find out why these gurriers are attacking your group, for example. Though Harry says it's a regular occurrence every night, but what nationalities are involved in your group?
Well, there's people from all over the world. There's Irish people there. There's Spanish people all over. But the question that I have, and even to Harry and to everybody else, is why was the American tourist last year attacked? This is a bigger issue in Irish society that a certain group just feel that they can do whatever they want. And it was daylight yesterday, so there wasn't any lighting issue. There needs to be more police. The Minister for Justice needs to be serious about this, and there needs to be more space in the prisons, and the judges need to put them away. That's the solution. But they don't seem to want to do it. We're there, we just want to dance. We want to be welcoming.
if they wanted to come and dance with us and say, hey, I want to learn salsa, we'd be open arms to them. But there was babies there.
Do you dance in any other open air spots, Jim?
That's the main one because it's on concrete, it's bright, it's in the city centre. But there isn't really. I mean, it's a shame. We don't feel like we can go back there anymore. You know? And I know from people living in the area.
And what about Smithfield? Smithfield.
I live in
Joe, the issue is light. It wasn't light yesterday.
I just want to ask Jim his experience up in Smithfield, Jim.
Smithfield, so I know Smithfield, and sometimes I get the same vibe in Smithfield. I think we could use Smithfield, that is an option, but the issue is these young lads that think that they can just do whatever they want.
Okay. What was your final point there, Harry? People are disputing that it's just a bit light. Harry, the issue is these young people. That's the issue.
No, I know. But they're able to operate.
Even though people are saying it isn't dark when it's happening, but the darkness sparks something inside them.
It was dark yesterday, but because they got used to going in there in the winter when it is dark, that's the problem. It's the darkness that attracts them. And when we're coming into the winter now, this is going to get worse and worse and worse unless it's fixed.
Well, have you said anything to anyone in authority, as they say?
Yes. I've been up with the police. I've been onto the corpo. I begged them to let me go ahead with the work on those two sealed boxes to make them safe and bright. And if they withdrew the objection to my planning, I would have those open as a really brightly lit pair of one as a flower box. And the other one as a coffee bar, and that would go a huge way to solving the problem because there's no shadows for those young fellas to hide in.
Okay. Harry Crosby, Jim and Emer, best of luck with your... And Harry, as you say, your wife runs a restaurant down there. How is that affected business-wise?
Yes, absolutely. They've been shut down a few times. The people are intimidated. The young fellas came in, kicked the doors in, and we've had to close several times.
Oh, my God. Okay, Harry. Joe at RT.ie. Owen Lynch. Owen, good afternoon. By the way, Owen, I know you're saying it was brilliant and the organisation is excellent because you got out early, but we're getting more and more texts in from people who were stuck for 4 or 5 hours. You were in a camper van, so were you in a different car park, Owen?
Yeah, hi Joe. Yeah, we were in the camper van section and the caravan section, and I have to say we left at 10, and the traffic management was just superb.
From the camper van park,
they had like contra flow, so you know you had both lanes on the public road going in one direction.
I'm glad you got home safely. But unless there's a conspiracy here among people, among bad actors, which there isn't. To ring in to say we're stuck for four hours. I've now people I saw during the hiatus there before the program started when they heard we were doing this. People saying there's lots of people. Do you believe them?
Oh, I do believe them because I'd say they're in a different part. So you know, it's vast. The whole area is vast.
What a 75,000 people plus.
Yeah,
plus
but
the other
side. I would have to give them full credit, Joe. The organisation was superb.
Great.
For the whole weekend. Hang on, Owen.
Does the whole weekend include your egress, your leaving of?
Well, then
you can't say. You can say from your point of view it was fantastic.
Yes, from our point of view.
And then, as I say, we'd probably hear the ad, and then obviously the ad was made before last weekend. They're selling tickets this week for Electric Picnic and thank you for making EP24 such a success. But the main thing, as far as I'm concerned, at the weekend is that everybody gets out safe and sound. That's the main thing.
If they could just apply the same traffic management which they did to the camper van section, if they could apply that to the other section,
it looks like everyone in the yellow jacket is gone.
Yeah, okay. I don't understand that. They were there this morning.
Check the back of your camper van on. Okay. Good luck. Safe home. Glad you got home safely. Joe at RT.ie. 51551 is the text number at 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie 51551. Anne-Marie McHugh, Dublin. Trouble on at Mill. Trouble on the Quays. Trouble outside Trinity. Trouble down at Grand Canal Dock. What is what do you want to relate, Anne-Marie, please?
Well, it was nothing that I personally witnessed, but there was a group that I belong to, a Facebook group, Things to Do in Dublin.
Okay.
And a lady from Glasgow just contacted the group, and she said, you know, that she was there with her three friends, and that basically there was open, you know, she said Dublin is a no-go area, is what she was saying. That down by the Quays, there was open drug dealing going on. There was a guy walked out near, say she was down near Trinity, walked out of it, his eyes like nearly closed, going out in front of traffic. And she said there was people smashing bottles, and she was terrified. And she said she was going to go back to her hotel and not go out. She said she herself and her friends were terrified.
Wow.
Absolutely terrified. And like, this is the thing, I'm on a thing to do in Dublin, you know, sometimes you suggest people things, places where they can go and see things, and, you know, and you get information yourself of things that are on in the city, but everyone that was commenting were saying, you know, that they were really disgusted with our politicians, that they're doing nothing. And, you know, like, I'm in my early 50s, and I remember a time where you'd hear on the news about Tony Gregory, who did so much for inner city against drugs, the women against drugs. And I think we're coming back to a time where, you know, the politicians are doing nothing to help. There is a problem, and people can blame, you know, say that there aren't enough guards in the streets and things like that. But it's not that. They're short-staffed. They don't seem to have, you know, the government don't seem to have enough resources there. But people are talking about it time and time again. But nothing's been done. Like, there's no action. Mm-hmm. Nobody, I can't see any politicians putting their heads out there to try and actually do something for the city.
Okay, you stay there, Anne-Marie, please. You, Connor, Joe at RT.ie, you was in Dublin. Are you agreeing with Anne-Marie and Oisin and Jim earlier on?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Joe. Law and order is not breaking down. It has broken down. It starts off, for example, look at the traffic lights. People just walk out, ignore the traffic. They don't care whether they have the green man telling them to go. There's no consequences. 13, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, they know they can do whatever they like and there's no consequences. We'd have to do it like Rudy Giuliani did in New York. You have to bring in a zero-tolerance policy, because these kids are not stupid. They know.
And you're saying Talbot Street has been rechristened?
Tablet Street, yeah. It's just open drug dealing there. People come the wrong way down on scooters and they're all ballied up. All you can see is their eyes because you know they can't get caught on CCTV.
What's ballied up mean? Balaclava?
Balaclava, yes.
Okay. And would you agree with Harry Crosby said it's actually getting much worse in the recent past?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Since lockdown, it's gone terrible. We'd have to bring a zero tolerance in. It has to be something. Build prisons, put them away. Let them know. See, the kids know there's no consequences. Okay. They're not stupid kids.
Stay there, Hugh. Malachy Daly, Malachy.
Yes, yeah, this is me.
Go ahead, your point, please.
Yeah, I'm listening to some of the programme there about lawlessness down in the Docklands area.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to it and looking at it, and there were riots on the streets there, and very young kids throwing dust. And you read about it every day in the paper and on social media. There's one way to stop it. Get them, get their address. That house, go to the parents and tell them if they're caught once more, social welfare, anything going into that house that's coming from the government is cut off.
And what would that achieve apart from impoverishing people?
It achieved the parents taking control of their children. That's what it had achieved. Because the bread and butter on the table would be affected, and they would then clamp down on their own children. They're responsible for their own children, but they don't take the responsibility seriously.
Why do you feel they don't clamp down? If that's the problem at the minute, Malachy.
Well, they're out every night creating havoc. So just, nobody's taking responsibility for the children. The guards can't do anything. They're laughing at the guards. If the household is hit and the youngsters, the parents don't get their social welfare or whatever, or if they're old enough to get social welfare, some of them over 18 or whatever, whenever it kicks in.
Well, if they're over 18, even your carry on there about parents get, presuming that the people on social welfare, if they're over 18, they're adults.
Yeah, well, I'm primarily thinking, talking about children, from the ages of 12 to 16, 17. It's rampant in Dublin and all over the country. And they're getting away with it. But if the penalty was imposed upon the household that they come from, it would bring results immediately.
But the problem, Maliki, is that suggestion has been made time after time, make the parents pay. And it never gets off the ground, because when you start getting into the ins and outs with, and the complications of it and the effect of it and the success or otherwise, it just never gets off the ground. It's not from the lack of people, or I'm sure civil servants looking at it from time to time, but it just never gets off the ground. It just never gets off the ground in any country, Anyway, OK, Maliki Daly, Anne-Marie McHugh and indeed Hugh Connor. Go to Milamaga, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie, it's that time of year again, childcare and schools, but there's a big change this year. And the government is saying we're giving more money into preschool, lots more money, but the effect is very different. John, will you explain? I know you're the parent of three children. You play a significant amount on childcare every month. John, what's happening?
Yeah, so am I allowed to name the facility?
So, no
Tiger Childcare at the start of July sent out a letter to the parents of 3,000 kids, maybe slightly more, saying that they were considering their position in the core funding model that the government set up to help subsidise creches.
Okay.
And if they pulled out, this would increase the fees by 40 to 50% for parents. They also asked the parents to sign a petition to get a meeting with the minister and his representatives.
Okay.
Come the end of July, then, we got an update saying they got that meeting. And there was an agreement brokered between the department and the childcare facilities that they could potentially self-assess their own fees and then increase the fees to, I believe, the average rate in the county.
Which is what? Giving me figures now. I need figures.
So the local, for example, I'm in Kildare, so the local, according to the government website that I found, the local average for Kildare would be 840-ish per month.
Per child?
Say, a baby, 0 to 2 years old.
But you have three children, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. Yeah.
Are you paying 3 by 8?
No, thankfully, no. Two of them have kind of gotten into primary school, so the fees kind of drop off.
Wow.
But we're still paying above the average already.
The minister, as you know, Minister Roger Gorman, leader of the Green Party, he said that, it's a while ago now, in Budget 24, he reduced childcare fees yet again by 25%. Did that not happen?
So the agreement was the NCS funding, which currently is 140 per hour, would increase to 214 per hour for each child. So if you have, a baby, for example, that'd be an extra €144 in a parent's pocket per month come September. Now, the agreement that it looks like is if the creches are allowed to increase their fees, they'll be allowed to take it out of that €144.
Okay, now we're getting too confused here. Earlier, you say Tiger Childcare sent out an email which sent a wave of fear over every parent. Why?
That they were going to pull out the core funding completely and increase the fees by 40 to 50%.
Which would bring the fees to what per child per month?
In my case, it would probably have increased the fees to somewhere between 1750 and 2 grand a month.
For one child?
No, for the three kids.
For the three kids, okay.
Yeah. Now, there are parents that will be getting considerably more of an increase if they have kids in full-time care and all that.
So because Tiger are saying we're not taking the money from the government. So obviously the parents are the only customers as such. So yeah, they're going to have to pay the, and you're saying it would have brought it up to what, 2,000 a month in your case, for the 3-8.
In my case, yeah.
Okay, okay. Let me go to Karen Klingchu's CEO of Tiger Childcare. Karen, what's happening?
Hi, Joe. Firstly, I suppose the letter that went out to parents was to let them know of the dire situation that we were in. We're going into core funding in a non-profit making, so an unsustainable position. So where we would have had to close our doors if we didn't take drastic action. However, the letter that went out talked about a 35 to 40% increase if we had to walk away from core funding.
Okay, core funding. Again, Karen, we need to explain to listeners, what is core funding and why are you walking away from it? Core funding, I presume, is a grant.
Yeah, it's an amount of funding that we get to support higher paying conditions within the sector and also the increased administration that has come with running all the funds. However, it's only 16% of our income. So all of the rest of our income is coming from parents' fees, which haven't been able to be increased, in our case, since 2019. And the cost of running the business has dramatically escalated since 2019, as you can imagine. The biggest thing that's escalated has been wages and conditions within the sector. So we've had an employment regulation order, which it tells us what should be paid to our colleagues, which we, as Tigers, we're in support of that. We're in support of continued increases in paying conditions. However, we're only funded at what the ERO levels. We're underfunded because we're only funded at what the TESLA regulations are per room, which we have to obviously employ above those regulations. And actually, paying conditions are well in excess of the ERO. The ERO
we're going into jargon again. What's ERO?
So it's an employment regulation order. So okay, that's an order that's put on us.
Now, so you're saying you have 22 outlets in Ireland, Tigers Childcare. Yes. You're saying the reason why you were going to refuse the money from the government, which the government go on about how brilliant, blah, 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 which is fair enough. The reason you're going to refuse the money is simply the pressures that money imposes on you, including not being able to put up your prices and various other regulations, is simply not worth it. And you're better off saying to the government, no, we don't want that. You said it's about 16% of your funding. We don't want that 16% of your funding. But what's the main reason why you don't want it? Is it the paperwork?
No, it's really because you can't run a quality childcare service on the current conditions. Now, we have gone back to Parents Joe just to crack the narrative there. We are, so under the terms of core funding year three, if you are stuck at these lower levels that are lower than the county average, you can now make an application to increase your fees, but to no higher than what parents will receive in extra funding in September. We are taking that line and we're hoping that we will be successful this is our last call position. It's not a position we want to take because we do understand actually by taking that position that our most vulnerable families may not be able to take a fee increase. So we're fighting tooth and nail not to have to come to that position.
Okay, I don't know where we are at this stage.
It's not something we want to do.
Alec Flood, Alec, stay there, Karen, please. Yeah. Alec Flood, Little Rainbows.
Hi, Joe.
Will you explain why, if the government are giving you funding, are so many creches saying, no, we don't want it, it's not worth it? Why?
So, Joe, my wife and I, Monica, have two services on the north side of Dublin in Dunamead and Balmain.
Okay.
And we were in core funding for the first 2 years. We weren't happy, but we stayed in. But in year three, when the contracts came out in the middle of July, we decided not on financial reasons, but because there was just too much interference in the running of the business in terms of decisions. I'd agree with Karen there that it's very difficult then to run a quality service for the children that are in our care, to also balance the pay needs of staff and for the service to be able to remain viable. So, it is, as the parents have pointed out, it's way too expensive to provide childcare. And unfortunately, I disagree with the government, even though they say they're investing records amounts. The amount per child is actually some of the lowest in the world. It would probably rank us, according to the OECD, in line with Turkey and Mexico. That's the levels of childcare that the government are investing.
Well, they're saying now we've a long statement in. I wish they'd invest in someone that can come on the radio and talk about their issues. But anyway, 18 paragraphs are expecting me to read out, or else they complain. This is a voluntary scheme, although well over 90% of childcare providers choose to take part. So basically you're an outlier, Alex, because 90% are taking part, and it's the same figure going forward.
So, Joe, the reality is this is year three of core funding. In year one, they were correct, I think it was 94%. Of earlier services signed up. That dropped to 86%, I believe, in year two. And because the contracts haven't been signed yet in terms of the final date is the 28th of this month, we won't know how many people are signing up. And to be honest with you, the surveys that are being carried out by a lot of the provider groups indicate that it's going to be maybe 50-60% are going to sign up. So the amount of
It's well over 90%. They've doubled. The application for rate for next year's round of core funding is it's the same as before, which is 90%. We've doubled the spending on childcare from 600 million to 1.1 billion.
And that's still not enough, unfortunately. You know, other countries that were comparable to all around Europe would invest, you know, the target is 1%. I think a lot of them on average invest about 0.8% of GDP.
And basically what the department are saying and the government are saying, some providers, obviously this is you and Karen, some providers may choose to stay out of core funding or choose to withdraw from core funding. In that case, as private businesses, they are free to set their own fee levels and to increase fees if they wish. So they're saying that's why you're pulling, that's why you're not taking the core funding, because you want to hit the parents to get more money than you would have got through the core funding.
Well, we're going to make a loss. I'll be down in revenue, not going to make a loss, but we're going to be down in revenue because of this decision. And we're in the lucky position in that we're actually opening a third service, and we're going to use funds from that, or the revenue from that, to subsidise the two services.
So, Alex of the Rainbows, what is the percentage increase then for parents per child?
So, we have announced in Parkside it's a 22% increase, and Dunamead it's a 23%. But that equates to an extra €55 per child, so what full time child.
So what is that? One child per month, how much total with the increase?
It's about 220, 210, 220 euros per month.
Per child.
We charge on a weekly basis because that's what the government schemes. They want us to do work it on a weekly basis, so that's what we've reverted to in recent years. But that's before there's an increase in the National Childcare Scheme subsidy. So just to put it in context, we're putting our fees up by €55. If we were to give the core funding that we are forgoing and giving up, if we were to give that to each of our parents, it would actually be €65. And that's how inefficient it is to actually give that money to the providers. We're taxed on it. We have to have extra admin staff. We have to administer it to then dictate how we promote our staff internally, and a lot of kind of restrictions in relation to quality and regulations. So we've given that up. And we have decided to work with parents as part of the National Childcare Scheme to try and maximise the subsidies that they receive. And actually, we're making some good headway in increasing the subsidies for the parents in Little Rainbows.
Well, John, to come back to John, the original caller, the parent. John, what do you think of this government statement saying everything's gone up dramatically?
I don't disagree that there's an issue with core funding. What I disagree with is the fact that the childcare facilities are trying to get a third stream of funding using the benefit, I suppose, that was originally designed to go to parents by applying for increases in their fees and taking it out of the NCS scheme. Like when you look at Tigers, for example, they've nearly doubled their business in the last 3 years. They've raised 10 million in funding to expand their operations. They're still expanding. They're due to open up another creche in the Kildare region in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Possibly, thereabouts. If you're a business and you're walking in looking for a loan and your first line is, we're really unsustainable, please give me money. Do you think a bank manager is going to give you the money? They're definitely making money. They're just, you know.
So we'll put it directly then to Karen. Karen, the CEO. Karen, you heard what John said. You're definitely making money. Why are you going down this road?
I think John, firstly, I don't know where the other service is. We're purchasing Kildare in the next 2 to 3 weeks. I haven't a clue where that is. But yeah, we have. We've 10 million worth of funding, but those funders have to be repaid. And since we've gone into core funding 3 years ago, which is after we took out those loans, we are now unsustainable in every single one of our full day care services, except for one that we acquired in Cork, which has higher fees, and that's the only reason it's sustainable. You know, John has to ask himself the question of, does he value the childcare service that he's in? Does he want his children to be in a service that's sustainable and of high quality? Because that has to be paid for, and it can't continue to be paid for out of the profits of childcare services. We're not looking for huge profits here. We're looking for sustainable profits that allow us to increase paying conditions, allow us to invest in the environments for the children, and to make sure that we have support systems for the families that we take care of. And just to kind of
so
correct
much
the figures
for the
department
correct of you.
Just the department's figures for signing up for core funding for this year. One of the stipulations to go through the process of seeing can you have your fees increased is you must sign up for core funding. So all services that may be increasing their fees will sign up, but it doesn't mean that they'll stay in core funding if they can't increase their fees. So those figures coming out from the department are flawed in saying that this core funding year three is a success, because that will be based on whether providers will stay in if they cannot increase their fees.
Do you want to ask Karen any questions, John?
I just like clarity. Like we did get the benefit in September for the reduction increase that was promised by the Budget 24.
Okay.
I just want to know, are we going to get that in October, November, December, so that all parents can start to plan, you know, like every parent, well, parents knew that they were going to get this reduction in September. What they were not expecting was letters to come out in July to say that actually you mightn't get this reduction, we're going to keep that money. Thanks very much.
But John, you do understand that the only way we'll be able to increase fees is if we are outliers in the cost of care in the region, so that all other services around us are paying or have higher fees.
So
you're
can I
receiving
ask you a question?
A discounted
by what
moment.
By what metric are you using to judge the average cost?
We don't have that metric. It's actually the department that will make that call. We're in no control over that. So they have an average fee.
I found a government website over the weekend that gives you the breakdown of every county average, whether it's a private creche fee or a creche or a public creche facility, whether it's full-time, whether it's part-time. They give you the average breakdowns of everything. And I can tell you, in your Kildare branches, you are charging above the county average already.
There's a new update that hasn't been put onto the Pubble website, and we're under the average now, John, so that has been updated. It's not on public record yet, but it has been sent to all providers from GCE DIY. So we are only allowed, we're not allowed to increase our fees if we are above the county average. The government will not allow us to do that. So it's only in the case that we're outliers and under what the fees are. And we don't make the call. It's not a self-assessment process yet, unfortunately. It's a laborious process done through DCE DIY themselves, so we don't have the choice.
Okay. Still confusing. You say, Karen, but the discussions with the department are not concluded.
Yeah, well, what we had was consultation. I suppose what we've been calling for a long time was consultation, so the department could understand our point of view, where the extra costs are coming from. Things that they didn't understand, such as actual operating ratios, not, you know, ratios through TUSLA. That meeting went well and hopefully opened the door. And what it did bring to us was some clarity in regards to timescales for these decisions on fees, how they will be made, the process that we are going through. And I suppose we felt the meeting went quite well and opened that door. So we would be hopeful that where it is fair, that we will be able to increase our fees. And we think rightly so that it shouldn't hit the pocket of parents, but it might hit the pocket in their affordable childcare scheme. They might not see the increase they're going to get in September land with them, but that will only be in the case where we are heavily, fees are under the average of where we are, so where other providers around us are charging more expensive fees.
Okay, we'll try and keep on top of it. John, Karen and indeed Alex Flood, thanks indeed. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, 75,000 people at Electric Picnic seem to have a great time, but the ads started going out on radio this morning. Thank you for making it such a success. But it seems once the ad went out, all the stewards and everyone else left and people are stuck in car parks. Aoife, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
What time did you get into your car at?
Well, I got into my car about 11:30 and we were sitting in the car park for 2.5 hours and it was only about 2.5 or 3 hours later that we were able to get onto the road.
Okay. And the main thing is how many staff were there helping you get onto the road?
There was one. I only saw one staff member. He was head of the security, but he wasn't doing anything. He might have been flustered.
And when you arrived, how many people were bringing you into the car park?
There was no one. Like, I was just following the crowd. There was no one around. And I actually got lost for a bit, and I didn't know where to go, but I was just following everyone else.
Yeah, okay. But then parking people forget about it when it comes to going next year. And you say traffic has never been as bad. It's a real sour note. But would it put you off going again?
It definitely would. They're selling the tickets in a couple of days. And for €300, I definitely don't think I'd be going again. There's so many other festivals where you could go when they'd actually... It was like as soon as the festival was over, they didn't care at all because... While the festival was on, there was lots of staff. They took great care of us. But as soon as it was over, it was just as if they didn't care. And in a couple of days, if I had to pay €300 to go again, I don't think I wouldn't be going.
Okay. Aoife, thanks indeed, and a safe travelling above all else. Claire, good afternoon. Back to Dublin and the locations that people are talking about. Where you're a regular supporter of the arts in Dublin, even though you live a long way. And what's happened recently, Claire?
Well, it's not exactly recently. About a year and a half ago, I just became more and more intimidated by behaviour on the streets. And sadly, I just don't feel that I can travel to attend events anymore.
And so, was there an incident or...
Not any one particular incident, an accumulation of incidents that were getting more and more serious in their nature. Constant begging, street brawling, open drug taking, guys urinating on the streets. It just began to feel very unsafe. Lots of electric bikes as well, just being feeling that you're going to be mown down even on the pavement at any stage.
And have you spoken to friends or is it a common experience?
Well, I kind of thought that it was just me, and I was apologising to somebody who produces opera recently, and he said, "Oh God, you've no idea. So many of our local Dublin supporters feel exactly the same, and we're seeing a big fall off in attendance, and that people, when they're contacted, or even they come and say it, they're attributing it to just not feeling safe on the streets anymore."
Okay, which is a terrible pity. It really is. It's such a fantastic city. Okay.
It's a wonderful... it's our heritage. And it's also, the arts might seem like a first world problem, but it's the reason a lot of tourists are attracted to Dublin, and a lot of visitors will take in a show. They see Dublin as a cultural location.
Of course.
Sadly, it's just deteriorated so much. And I suppose because I'm not there all the time and because I was just visiting, I began to notice it and perceive the behaviour more and more with each visit.
Okay, Claire, thanks indeed, and hopefully things will change. Thank you so much.
Please go. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. John, Airbnb, what's the issue?
Hi, Joe. Yeah, I live in Dublin inner city, and over the years, our terrace of 23 houses has now got 5 Airbnbs.
Okay.
And
wow.
It's 22% of the housing stock. Mm. I raised it with our local councillors during the local elections, and they said 22% said it's not unusual in some apartment blocks. It's much worse. One of the problems, well, first of all, obviously we know we have the worst housing crisis in Europe, and we have a situation where we're taking out family homes and giving them to tourists, and some of the tourists are now not staying in the hotels or guest houses, which we have plenty of, but they're staying in other people's homes. Mm-hmm. And
what we were getting, just I mentioned it last week, what we were getting phone calls about last week are these new lockboxes, which are a lot of people have them on the side of their own homes. If your child or whatever comes home, or you forget your keys, there's a combination on this box. You open it and you open your door and put your key back in. They're very sturdy, and now you can buy ones that can be wrapped around a pole or something sturdy on the street. Have you noticed them, by the way?
Yes, there's hundreds, if not thousands, of those on Dublin Street, attached to railings, to lampposts.
Okay.
And each lockbox that you see on a railing or on a bike park or on a lamppost, that's a landlord deciding to lock someone out of a home because he's decided, or in many cases it's the company that owns the property, they've decided they don't want office workers, they don't want families, they want to make their home available to tourists. And you have a situation where there's thousands of these. I went on Airbnb, which is the main platform. There was, in Dublin, there was 862 houses available in the middle of a housing crisis for tourists, but aren't available for the people. And I've been on to Dublin City Council about removing the lockboxes because, first of all, they're on council property. If someone trips on one of the lockboxes, I think I sent you a picture there, Joe, of about 7 lockboxes attached to one lamppost. If someone trips on that, they're not going to sue Airbnb. They're going to sue Dublin City Council. But the other issue I have with Airbnb, apart from them causing massive homelessness in the inner city, is the rubbish. They fly-tip their rubbish everywhere. I remember just a couple of houses down, I saw a young girl. She was cleaning it for whoever the landlord was, and she had big bags of rubbish. She looked left and right, sees me looking at her, walks around the corner and comes back without the rubbish. And I said, what did you do with the rubbish? Well, I just threw it over there. We're told when we're cleaning them, we can't leave the rubbish in the property, but we can't put it outside the property because we get a black mark in our review. So I said, what do you do? We're just told to get rid of it. And they work for Airbnb, not directly, through a contractor situation. So if you have, say, 1,000 Airbnb homes in Dublin inner city being rented out, there's 1,000 bags. I don't know if anyone has noticed the explosion of litter bags that has, if you like, thrown across the streets. And I have dozens of emails to councillors. No point writing to Airbnb because it's nothing to do with them. And really the situation needs to be regularised. If you apply for planning permission and you get it and you can show how you get rid of your rubbish, that's fine. But I talk to the rubbish cleaners in Dublin City. When I see them, they say, yeah, Airbnb rubbish is everywhere. I met a girl, a Canadian girl, and she was here on holidays. And she said, how can you live with all that disgusting rubbish on your streets? And she told me she's staying in Portobello. I said, are you staying in the Portobello house? She said, no, I'm in an Airbnb. I said, the Airbnb are causing this problem. Dublin City Council needs to bill all the Airbnb and all the other providers for the cleaning. But it really is, it's shocking. So people have inherited a house, and my direct next door neighbour, the kids inherited the house. I'm sure their parents would be dying, turning in the grave if they knew they were giving it to holiday lets. Because, Joe, it's a pain in the neck living beside holiday lets. Between antisocial behaving, I remember one time, 3 o'clock in the morning, there's people kicking in the door next door trying to get in because one of the guys had got in early, fell asleep drunk. They were trying to kick the door in to get his attention. We have situations where if you're antisocial in a hotel, they'll kick you out, but you can be as antisocial as you like in an Airbnb. There's no consequences. There's no one to complain to. We had a situation where we're getting things ready for a kid's birthday, and there's a lot of rubbish outside one of the Airbnb houses. And we had the house tidy. Whatever way the seagulls or whatever they strew, was strewn all over the streets. Mm. Soil, sanitary protection, cans, beers, you name it. And because it's Airbnb, no one cleans it up for them, and the people don't clean it up. Like, had it been a resident there, we would have knocked on the door and say, listen, the seagulls got your rubbish. But it's out of control. Dara O'Brien, the housing minister, needs to be able to pull every lever to get housing stock into the market. Mm. And he's holding a leaky bucket. You'll hear him on the radio saying things like, oh, we 600 new commencements in January, and we're up here in Mayo, commencements are up. But
John, in fairness, has Annie, given that the right to private property is enshrined in our constitution, which is unusual in itself, and there's now, after all the various referenda, we've never proposed to take it out, but it should be taken out. But anyway, we should give the government more power. But has any city or any country successfully policed Airbnbs?
Yeah, well, they have. First of all, they're kicking them out of a lot of countries, thank God. In Europe, they call them black market rentals because they've no planning. And I remember talking to a friend of mine. I said, where are you going? She said, oh, I'm going to West Cork. We're staying in a fisherman's cottage. I said, well, where's the fisherman staying? And she said, I don't think it's fisherman anymore. I think it's just someone's house. I said, you go to West Cork. There's guest houses galore down there. And they feel, and I said, well, you do know there's a housing crisis. Ah, but no one wants those ones. I said, there's people living in Sydney, Australia, because they can't afford to buy near their family in West Cork. But they are looking at banning, as I say, Airbnb. They call them black market rentals. And black market rentals, they're stopping them in Barcelona. They've stopped them in New York. They've stopped them in Valencia. And interesting enough, in Italy, the tax authorities got onto Airbnb and said, give us a list of all the people who have Airbnb properties because we want to make sure they're paying the right tax. Mm. Airbnb said, no, we're not tax collectors. The Italian government said, look, we reckon you got this amount and we reckon there's a liability for the state that you own for about, if you like, lost tax of about £1 billion. Airbnb wouldn't pay us. They went to court. Airbnb settled for £800 million in lieu of lost tax to the Italian government, which they're putting into housing. Our friend Dara O'Brien should do the same. Mm. As I say, in the inner city area, to have 25% of homes Airbnb, okay. And it's so depressing. Every time I come home, I don't know who my new neighbour is. You know, some of them are well behaved, some of them aren't. Some of them are taking drugs.
I'm anxious to. I know in New York last September they introduced a new bylaw which was extraordinarily strict. But I'd love to know how it's actually working out, because it strikes me that the bylaw was designed that anyone would find loopholes in. And maybe if we have any New York listeners, how's the Airbnb market going? Okay, John. Thanks indeed. That's John Devlin. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
It's now Oisín. How long have you been in the car park at Electric Picnic?
We've just left the car park there now, Joe.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, just about. We're heading down the road towards the...
Great. How long did it take you to get out for a finish then?
God, that's nearly 4 hours there. We're still not fully out of the woods yet, but yeah, nearly there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, Oisín, safe travelling. Okay, Dave Berry, you want to put out a warning about jellyfish and open water swimming. Apparently the water is quite pleasant at the minute, and may stay that way. Dave, it's about what jellyfish?
Well, Joe, it's more, I was doing a charity swim for... swim the length of Leinster this summer. So
wow.
I've done 11 legs of it so far. Each of the legs about 20k a pop.
Right.
So I started at Topfitts at Carnarford Lough, and then I'm down as far as Wexford Harbour Ballpark at the moment. And on the way, I've encountered quite a few of the fellows. and they're nasty beasts. So,
and where did it, like where did you get them in the arm, the back? Where did they go for?
You're just, it's beyond the water and the east coast of Ireland, it's quite murky. So you're swimming along, and most of the swim lengths that I'm doing, they're 20K, they're about 6 hours. So in that 6 hours, you can hit one or three or four. The worst I had was down near Arklow. I was swimming in about an hour into it, I hit one, and then about 2 hours later, I hit another fella, which are lion's manes, by the way. So they pack a bad punch. And then about an hour left in the swim, I hit another one face on. And wow, at that point, I knew I was in bad way. But the way I'm swimming it is it's under the Irish long distance swim rules, which is okay, one swim cap, pair of goggles, togs, no wetsuits or electronics.
Oh. Yeah, which,
and you have to finish it.
Yeah, which is for most people swimming in the sea, leisure
swimming. Yeah, no, it is.
But God, I don't envy you what you have to go through, Dave. But by the way, can you see the jellyfish coming towards you?
Sometimes you can. So yesterday I was down near Clarehead, and I hit a barrel of jellyfish, which they're big. They're about the size of they can go as big as a metre long.
Okay.
But I hit it from behind, and normally those things don't sting, but because I got it in the face, I had a reaction to it, so it felt like sunburn, and then it felt like it was blistering, and 24 hours later, it's still a bit sore on it. But going back to the lion's manes, when you hit them, when I hit that fourth one, when I was in Arklow, I was in bad shape that I actually had to go into the RNL or ring the RNLI. And I was on my own boat and had a safety boat with me, so I was able to get into the RNLI, but I rang them. And they looked after me really well, but I ended up in a hospital on the back of it.
Wow.
So they got me an ambulance and ended up in James's hospital. And lots of strange, wonderful drugs later, or awful drugs, should I say, later. The pain disappears, but
what is the sting like, Dave? Is it excruciating?
There's loads of different types of jellyfish in the Irish Sea, but the main ones are the compass ones, which have sort of like they're quite pretty, but they're like a long sort of tail on them. When you get stung by them, it's like getting hit by nettles. That's what I just call them, nettle things. They're annoying and they disappear after a period of time.
Okay.
But a lion's mane can be, it's awful. It's like getting a bunch of wasp things, and depending on where you get them. That time, and I've been stung loads of times. Last year, I swam from Ireland to Scotland, and in the 12-hour swim, I hit, I don't know how many, but I was okay. I wasn't that bad with them. Afterwards, you have like sweats, and then you have like sort of pulsates on your legs. It's like you have a bad flu, but it's excruciating pain. But what's the worst feeling on them? It's your extremities, so your hands and your feet. They feel like they're burning, and like as a grown man of 49 years of age, like you've tears going down your face when you get a bad one. But it's very hard to know which is a good one and a bad one, and you don't want to hit any of them.
But is there any way of preventing?
I wish I knew, but no. It's, I think when you hit them, you just sort of have to suck it and hope it's not a bad one. So I've hit ones that are as I said, that they're like a wasp thing, and then I've hit other ones that they're just excruciating pain. Like it's okay. So is there an answer to it? No, but apart from going to your doctor, and hopefully they can prescribe something that will ease the pain off it.
But you'll keep swimming. You're an incredible swimmer. You're incredible.
But I enjoy it.
You're incredible.
So I enjoy
incredible.
It was only because of COVID came along I started doing it, and then Leinster Open Water Sea Swimming. They have races every Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, so like they're looking after the Liffey Swim this year, which is on the 21st of September.
But it is happening. Great. There was some doubt earlier on, but that's great. Liffey Swim, 24th of September. Dave Berry, Gurry Míle Mhaggad, Mark Dwyer and Sound, Richard Burns, researcher, Tara Lockery, Grant Produce, and Anna Geary is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.